The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 27th of November, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Jeremy Martin, Chief Executive Officer of Horizonte Minerals. HZM is the ticker, and Jeremy provides an operational update on their nickel operations in Brazil. Also on the podcast, Peter Whale, Executive Director of Strategic Minerals, SML is the ticker there, and Peter talks through some of their Redmoor tin and tungsten drill results, which include some Bonanza-grade intercepts. Also, Dr. Dan Gooding, Chief Executive Officer of New Formix, NFX, and Dan explains how they've expanded its licensing agreement with its Chinese licensing partner for their lead program, which is NXP1, which is in development for cancer supportive care. And as always, I have two lists, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top tens of these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. And also, on the front page there, top left, you will see a heading called Crypto Watch. At the moment, cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, have gone through a hammering. But blockchain as a technology, a lot of people say it's the future. Now, I've got to say, there are thousands of cryptocurrencies out there, okay? A lot of them are useless. Absolutely. In fact, some of them are scams. So this is why it's worth going to Crypto Watch. We got Glenn Goodman, who trades in crypto. He's very experienced, and he selects out some currencies that he believes has potential in the future. Of course, it's not investment advice, still a very high-risk game here, but he's got some experience, so if I were you, I'd check that out. voxmarkets.co.uk, top of the page, Crypto Watch.
Are you tired of missing news about stock market companies you follow? The Vox Markets app helps investors stay ahead by making sure you never miss an important update. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Jeremy Martin, Chief Executive Officer of Horizonte Minerals. That's HZM ticker. Jeremy, thanks for joining me.
Justin, good to speak to you again.
Now, we've got a bit of an update here. I know lots of things going on in the background there. Sometimes you can't RNS everything you do, so it's nice of you to come on and just do a general update. So before we get into that, Jeremy, for people brand new to the podcast, new to invest in maybe, not familiar with the company, what is Horizonte all about, please?
Yeah, we're a dual-listed company on AIM and the main board in Canada, and we're focused in Brazil. We've got two 100% owned nickel projects, Araguaia, that we've just released a feasibility study on, and the Vermelho Nickel Cobalt project that we acquired from Vale at the start of this year. And we are aiming to be the next major nickel development company.
Marvellous stuff. Nickel, quite a hot commodity at the moment. So last time we talked, like we said, it was off the back of that feasibility study on the flagship project. So can you give us an update, you know, post that now, please?
Absolutely. Yeah, we released the feasibility study just over 4 weeks ago. It was a robust study showing that the project generated over $1.6 billion of free cash flow over its 28-year mine life. That 28 years is actually closer to 50 or 80 if you run it all the way through the resource base there. An NPV of $400 million, and you're producing 14,500 tons of nickel a year. The key thing is it's low cost. The C1 cost, which is the cost of production, over the first 10 years will be around $6,900 a ton, which makes it one of the lowest cost next generation of nickel projects out there. It's been an extremely challenging time post the release of the FS. Our share price has seen a significant downward trajectory, and I don't believe that's in any way a reflection of the quality of the study. I think it's more based around a couple of key factors. One, macro in terms of the global equity markets. We've seen a sort of a sluggish outlook, and I think we're going to see growth going forwards heavily reliant on central banks, and also around commodity pricing. I mean, from mid-year, we've had the US-China trade tariffs kind of rolling out, and nickel price has gone from a high of $15,000 a ton down to $10,700 a ton today. So it's nearly a 52-week low, and we directly track nickel price. And if you look at the AIM mining index, sort of companies between 20 to 100 million market cap January year to date, they're sort of 40 to 50% down. So it is a very tough market to be in at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, do you know what? At the start of the year, I asked sort of people on Twitter, I said, what do you think will be your pick for the year in 2018? And I had about 118 people submit their picks. A lot of the people replicated several different stocks. But 35% of those picks are 50% less in value now than they were at the start of the year. And only 18 of those 118 stocks are in positive territory. So it's been a brutal market, you know, especially the last few months. So it's been hard work. And I think generally anyone releasing news is getting sold into, you know, because of the general fear about the markets. But talking about nickel in particular, what's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think the picture of nickel hasn't changed from the beginning of the year. It's still a compelling commodity space to be in for the following reasons. Obviously, main use of nickel is in stainless steel. That's growing at around 5% year on year going forwards, and there's no low-cost substitute for stainless steel out there. So just to maintain the current supply-demand balance on the nickel side, you need 100,000 tons of new nickel coming online every year. And if you think about it, Araguaia is going to be 15,000 tons. You need another kind of 9 or 10 of those operations out there, and they're simply not out there. So that's number one. Number two, you've got obviously the electric vehicle market that we've all heard a lot about. And in terms of what it means for nickel, the main sort of penetration point, this is where electric vehicles become a significant part of car market share, is around 2025, 2030. What that means for nickel, if you take the low end of projection, it means 250,000 tons of new nickel. If you take the upper end, it's over 1 million tons of new nickel. And on a total market space today of 2.2 million tons, that's a game changer. The other factor is nickel metal on inventory on the LME and the SHFE in China. We've seen stocks in the last couple of months go down to around 215,000 tons, which is the lowest point in the last 5 years. And because the nickel space has been so depressed for the last 10 years, there's virtually no money has gone into the next generation of projects. And that's why Araguaia is so unique, being in a short time frame to production. So really, nickel space, all the things you want: robust demand from stainless steel today, next generation growth driver from batteries, metal being drawn down, and no big new operations to come online.
Yeah, and I assume, like you said earlier, I mean, there's concern midterm about global growth, but going further out, like you say, into the 20s, 2025 and all that, this has got to be sort of positive for your projects, hasn't it?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the key thing here is we're not going to be producing until 2021. So spot price today obviously affects market sentiment. But if you look across all of the suite of banks and price forecasts out beyond 2020, there isn't a price forecast below $15,000 a ton. And we used 14 in our long-term pricing for the FS. So we think it's a fantastic market to be in, but obviously just very tough where we've seen pricing come back. But I think you'll see prices recover, and I think you'll see kind of 13, 14 in the short term. And then when Araguaia comes online, I think you'll be at those upper price points. And you've got to remember, if you go back sort of the start of the last cycle at 2005, we had nearly 2 to 3 years of an average price of $25,000 a ton, and it hit $50,000 a ton. So we're trading at an abnormal point in the cycle today.
Yeah. Okay, so the feasibility was the big milestone. So what's next milestones going forward, Jeremy?
Yeah, we've got a lot going on. The next piece of news out will be showing what the addition of a second process line on Araguaia does to the economics. So that will take production from 14,500 tons of nickel a year up to over 28,000 tons. The idea is this is going to be financed through cash flow, and we think this will show some pretty compelling economics. So that's underway at the moment, and we aim to have that out before the year end. We've also got test work underway on our second asset, Vermelho, and that's to show you can produce ferronickel using the same process route as Araguaia, and also that you can produce nickel and cobalt sulfate potentially for the EV market. And we're also in the final stages of getting the construction permit for Araguaia, and we aim to have that early next year. So we've got a lot going on.
Yeah. Do you know, one of the things I've said of late is that it's a very tough market, and resource companies will be hit. Like we mentioned, the trade tariff war, where China's a big consumer of commodities. So, you know, if their economy's under threat, then commodities take a hit. And I said, if you're looking at resource stocks, you know, pre-revenue, one of the things you have to look at is make sure they have enough cash for the next milestone at least. And so as far as Horizonte is concerned, how's your cash looking?
That's the key. I mean, we've got 8 million, just under 8 million in the company today, which is 13.5 million Canadian. And that finances all the way through to the end of next year and beyond, allows us to put down all these milestones. And we've also got a good, strong shareholder register around the company, with Teck owning 14%, JP Morgan, Canaccord, the likes of Glencore. It is a solid register for a company of this size.
Yeah, okay. Well, Jeremy, if someone's listening to this right now, I like the sound of what you're talking about, and maybe, you know, they just looked at the share price and thought, oh, that's an opportunity. Give them three reasons they're not following the story, why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, I think number one is we have two of the highest grade nickel projects in the world today. The economics around Araguaia with the feasibility study are robust and show that it works at this current price point in the market. These assets are 100% owned. But the other factor is we have the ability to build a 50 to 60,000 ton a year nickel business between the asset base we now control, which is probably one of the largest resource bases 100% owned outside the majors. And to put that into context, Anglo American produces around 42,000 tons of nickel a year. So this is a very significant nickel resource portfolio. Number two, we're funded, obviously a key factor. And number three, we've got a number of key de-risking milestones over the next 3, 6, 12 months. And finally, we've got a very strong shareholder register. So if you want to get exposure to nickel, we are directly leveraged to nickel. And this is one of the best ways that you can do that.
Marvellous stuff. Jeremy, good to chat to you. And like I say, lots going on. So hopefully we'll be catching up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Many thanks.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Peter Whale, Executive Director of Strategic Minerals. SML is the ticker there. Peter, thanks for coming on.
Hi, Justin. Good day to you.
Yeah, well, it's a good day for you. I mean, you've had some decent results out from Redmore, drill results, including bonanza-grade intercepts. And we'll get into the detail of that, what it means, and where you're going next for that in a bit. Before we do, as always, if someone's listening now, tune in for the first time, not familiar with the company, explain Strategic Minerals, Peter. What's it all about?
Sure. Strategic Minerals, ticker SML, is a cash-generating, profitable, diversified, producing mineral company with different stages of operations across various developed jurisdictions. We're actively developing projects, prospective battery materials, such as copper, nickel, cobalt, and tin, where we believe there are long-term prospects for growth.
Excellent stuff. Well, let's look at this. So, Redmore, you've had some drill results out, and this is from your tin there. And explain why you're excited about these results then, Peter.
Okay, so you said decent results. I'm going to have to upgrade you there quite a few notches. I mean, you don't really get many opportunities to talk about what's a so-called bonanza strike. And I mean, we in hole 28, that the latest assay that was out, we absolutely have one. When I first saw the results, I thought it was a typo, or I thought there was a decimal wrong, something like that. But to have interceptions of 29% tin equivalent, 15% tin equivalent, 13% tin equivalent, I mean, those are just extraordinary numbers. Now, we probably had no expectation of seeing double-digit intercepts, let alone, you know, you imagine a 29% intercept, you're holding some tin in you're holding some ore in your hand, and it's a third of it is actually the metal, which is just quite incredible. So these results, it's obvious to say that they're coming in higher than our expectations, significantly higher. Holes 25 to 27 also gave a robust series of grades. They were all between sort of 1 to 5% tin equivalent. So our existing resource, which we define and around about a year ago, is a 1% tin equivalent resource. So if you look at the data that we've got, is showing that the average grades we're getting, and I stress this is average grades, but as a guide, the average grades are of the order of 50% higher than our current mineral resource. And we're looking to increase the grade and the tonnage of that resource. So it's a double win at the end of the day. Looking into the detail of the holes, holes 25 and 26 linked really well into hole 19 from last year's program. Hole 19 was actually the best hole last year. So to link up to that really increases the confidence for the potential to grow the resource tonnage and grade. Hole 28, this so-called Bonanza strike hole, actually targeted a new area below the existing resource and helped fill the gap around hole 19. So, you know, the fact that it produced these sort of intercepts is very, very significant. The other thing which was detailed in the RNS today is because of the very efficient team that we have, they've managed to find the resources and the time to actually drill a bonus hole, which is hole 32, which is ongoing at the moment. Now, this is going to add further valuable information, and you know, there's no doubt that will extend the known ore body as well.
So you're expecting it. This is phase two drilling, isn't it, Peter? So you're still drilling this. And so when are the further results expected then?
It should be, the assays, some of them are ongoing at the lab. Some of them are being prepared to go to the labs. We won't release anything now until we have all the results. So, you know, bearing in mind there's a bit of seasonality here as we approach Christmas, it's hard to be definitive about that. But, you know, within the next month or so is probably the kind of window you're looking at. But it's, as I say, it's hard to be too definitive. Mm-hmm. The real message from this is the calibre of the project has just taken a couple of notches up with these sort of headline numbers. And they are headline numbers. They're from one drill hole. But in combination of the fact that every hole we've drilled this year has been very impressive, we've just kind of blown it out of the water with this latest assay. So it greatly underwrites what we have. The other point to note is our resource is polymetallic, so it's made up of tin, tungsten, and copper. These results are largely copper and tungsten biased because they're at depth, and it is actually what we expected to find at depth. There's some selective tin there as well, but the accuracy we've got at the moment is really good. Speaking of tin, I actually attended the International Tin Conference last Friday, and there's an interesting few sound bites from there. So tin actually outperforms pretty much every other base metal this year. It's still down year to date. So in a down market, it's actually outperformed. So I think that's perhaps a bit of a dark horse. And there's very little speculative activity in tin at the moment. Now, I think perhaps that could change. There's probably only one way that can go. And tin is a very junior small market in terms of activity and speculation. So you've got big factors which could change tin. Everyone's seen the MIT Rio slide, which said tin was the most likely to be affected by changes in new technology. And I think there's gradually being some belief coming across to that. That slide was highlighted a lot by people presenting at the Tin Conference. And use in the rest of the world outside of China has been picking up as well. Any projects out there that are producing, the average ore grades are declining. There's a clear supply issue coming into view into next year. And I think the thing to stress as well that tin is a very poorly understood market, and tin projects are very poorly understood as well. But there's a gentleman, Dr. Jeremy Pierce, who presented, and he's very bullish about a tech super cycle in the years ahead. And because tin is such a small market, the relative impact could be huge, and that you could get a real quantum move. And most people just don't seem to realize tin is, you know, half of tins is used for lead-free solder. So every electronic piece of equipment, whether it's a EV, whether it's your phone, your computer, all of the circuitry is tin.
It seems like tin is very underestimated, under the radar kind of commodity. And just talking about this project, specifically, next two milestones are what, the resource definition, and hopefully that feeds into the pre-feasibility study, does it?
Yeah, and before the resource definition, you'll have all the assay results, which will give a good sort of steer in terms of what that looks like. In the shorter term, I would say there's a couple of other catalysts which are, a bit more indirect. South Crofty, the neighbouring mine in Cornwall, their owner Strongbow, is currently TSX listed. They are almost certainly listing on AIM very soon, and I think that helps put Cornish projects on investors' radar much more. And Brett Grist, who's our head geo down at Redmore, he's actually speaking at the Institute of Mining and Minerals conference next week. So again, that will help greater awareness.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, Peter, one final thing to do. I know you've got other things going on, so it's not just this project. There's lots of things going on, and you are sort of, about a 20 million market cap at the moment. So for people listening to this, like the sound of what you're doing here but are not yet following the story, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Certainly. So I would say significant undervaluation right now. SP Angel, our broker, put a 2p base case on the value of the company. Got a chance to buy now ahead of anticipated value creation, especially with Redmore, Lee Creek, our kind of oncoming project, which we're awaiting some assays at the moment from various drill programs we've had, and that should add some more credibility going forward. We're very positive about that. Our management options don't vest until 5.5p, so that's quite a few multiples of the current price. Secondly, we are a cash flow generating company, and we're looking to bring on the second cash flow asset next year. So that should be a key driver, and the company is fully funded at this time. And finally, the outstanding progress of Redmore is yet to be recognized or acknowledged by the market. The Strongbow IPO, as I just mentioned, might just be the tonic to tip the balance there.
Marvellous stuff, Peter. Good to chat to you. Like you say, lots of things going on, so no doubt we'll be catching up again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dr. Dan Gooding, Chief Executive Officer of Nuformix. NFX is the ticket. Dan, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin.
Now, you've had some decent news out. You've expanded your licensing agreement, and also you've received your first milestone payment. We'll go into that in a bit. Before we do, as always, Dan, if someone's listening right now, never heard of the company, could you give a quick explainer as to what you're about, please?
Of course, yeah. Nuformix is a pharmaceutical development company. Our business model is based on the development of novel therapies for unmet needs, and we will take those therapies to a point of proof of concept before out-licensing them to a pharma company. So the business model is an out-licensing model. But in terms of the products that we're developing, we specialize in the development of new uses for known drugs. And we do that using a technology in which we've become specialized called co-crystal technology. So by developing new therapies based on known drugs, we can dramatically modify the risk profile that you typically associate with this sector. So we have a risk-reduced approach to developing innovative therapies.
Okay, excellent stuff. And this news today is regarding your lead product here, it's NXP001. So take us through the detail here, please, if you could, Dan.
Yeah, sure. So our lead program here in NXP1 is a program in oncology supportive care. The news today was talking about how we've expanded our agreement with our current licensing partner, New Summit Bio. Back in September, we'd announced that we'd triggered the first milestone payment of £500,000. I realize there's some skepticism in the market potentially around sort of Chinese partners, but this is a partner that we've worked with for some time. We'd previously received payments for other programs that had been licensed from us. And it's great to be able to announce that, you know, these guys have performed exactly as we said they would in terms of making the first payment. Based on the data that was generated here and data that was also generated out in China, what we've seen is a potential with this product to go into multiple different applications, both within oncology supportive care as envisaged, but also we're seeing the possibility to take the program outside into potentially some other uses, which are really attractive. So it's on the back of that that we've been able to up negotiate the value of the milestones to $3 million, and we've still got a really strong royalty component, obviously, with our Chinese partner, who's very dedicated towards taking this product into the Chinese market.
Yeah, so that's good. So essentially, you've extended this. You've received a payment, and you are right. Some people are quite cynical when it comes to the Chinese companies, but now you've received that payment, so that will assuage people's fears, I assume. And so you've now upped the next milestone from 2.5 to 3 million because there's more potential here, this drug, this product. And so when will those milestones, or the next payment milestone, be completed then, Dan?
Sure. I think if we talk about when they will be paid as opposed to when they will be achieved, I think that seems to be the thing that investors are more concerned about. Based on what we're looking at the moment, we'll see another £500,000 milestone paid in quarter one, and then the remaining $2 million milestone, which is on the back of clinical data, which will be paid during quarter two. So that's the outlook. We've got some very near-term milestones, which will pay out. You know, there's also a very strong royalty component. You know, one has to look at the situation that China's in with cancer at the moment, something like 3 million people dying a year, 5 million people being diagnosed annually. You know, it's a very important market for oncology, and this will be a very widely used product in the Chinese market eventually.
Yeah, so this is good news, isn't it? I mean, the fact that, you know, you expected to be more potential here with this drug, that's very good news. I mean, was that completely a surprise to you or what?
No, it wasn't. I think we just had to, you know, we've just wanted to set people's expectations accordingly. I don't want to, you know, we want to get the data first to support some of the possibilities which we've identified. We'd always hoped that we would get the kind of data from our technology that we've received, and you know, we're delighted to see that we, you know, we've got possibilities here with this program which go beyond what we'd expected, and we look forward to taking full advantage of those opportunities with this program.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, Dan, well, you know the score here. At the end of each podcast, I do ask for three reasons, and every day on the podcast, I do highlight the top five most followed companies. So if you want to be hopefully in that top five, give someone who's listening right now, give them three reasons if they're not following the story, why they should hit that follow button on your page on Fox and add you to their watch list, please.
Of course, yeah. Well, I think it's firstly on today's news, obviously, this is confirmation of our business model and validation of our partner and their ability to deliver commercially, which is important in terms of the milestone payments we're due and the royalty stream also. Second reason would be, you know, we're very soon to update our pipeline. We've got more products coming into our pipeline that have that same profile, innovative products with low risk in terms of development. And then thirdly, we're also expecting to report soon on our NXP2 program in lung fibrosis. So look out for some really exciting data there.
Marvellous stuff. Dan, good to chat to you, and hopefully, like you say, you've got lots going on. Hopefully, we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
I look forward to that. Thanks, Justin.
OK, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, MOD Resources. That's MOD, of course, signing listed today. At four, Bidstack, BIDS. At three, Itaconics, ITX. At two, Flybe Group, and that's FLYB. And most followed company is Powerhouse Energy Group, PHE, and of course they released quite a spectacular RNS yesterday, I think, and very impressive, a hookup with Toyota. It doesn't get bigger than that. You know, for a small cap company, a micro cap company, to hook up with a global major like that is, well, it's the dream, you know. Top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Optibiotics, Slim Biome granted medical device status and CE mark. At four, I spoke to Peter earlier on, Strategic Minerals, Red Moor drilling update. At three, Infrastrata, replacement, completion of feed and P90 estimate. Of course, I had John Wood, CEO, on the podcast yesterday. Very well received. At two, Oriole Resources, Bonanza Gold grades at Bibemi in Cameroon. Number one, most liked RNS, came from Greatland Gold. That's Havieron results of new geophysical models. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.